This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Are these penalties all on the offensive line, or are there other parties culpable in these? We'll get to that. We'll get to D'Amico Ryans on his coach's show earlier this week in just a second. Boy, I didn't know that so many people would weigh in on which coach told Diana Rossini that success is like a martini. It relaxes you, and that's when you can get into trouble. End quote. The implication from our list being that it had to be a coach that enjoys several martinis.
Well, or maybe had a father who was a drinking issue or something, so he watched it from afar. But yeah,
Bruce Arians is getting a lot of love for this.
Yeah, now Arians is a guy that enjoys a drink, and probably also maybe he's gotten a little too relaxed at times.
Yeah, could be.
That sounds like a Bruce Arians thing.
Yeah,
this is somebody who ever said that. It's a nice little analogy. I've been going to the Jeff Van Gundy well for far too long. Do not ignore in victory what you would address in defeat. Mm-hmm. I like the martini one a lot better.
Steve Mariucci, definitely, somebody says. I don't know about that.
That sounds like something Mariucci would say. I don't know if he's a big drinker or not, but it sounds like something he would say.
Lou Holtz, somebody said.
It maybe sounds the most like Lou Holtz.
Success is like a martini. It relaxes you, and that's when you get into trouble.
Yeah.
I could definitely see him
and
saying
And then he links
that.
It to Hitler.
Yeah. He did do that.
Well, Hitler
one time.
Was amphetamines, but I could see. Yeah.
He did do that one.
He made
time.
It. He made a
leadership analogy.
Ill-advised leadership analogy with Hitler.
Yep,
I knew what he was driving at. It made sense. You just don't do it,
right? You just don't do it. Mike McDaniels, no. I would say maybe edibles for Mike McDaniels, not a martini.
Yeah, well, Mike McDaniels, though, he's a recovering alcoholic.
Yeah, that's true.
He cites his drinking issues as the reason that Gary Kubiak fired him.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and he says that in a way that's very, you know, it's not like angry at Gary Kubiak firing him.
He deserved
to get fired at the time. So McDaniels would know from personal experience, but also it seems like the kind of, this still feels more like too much of a middle age. The fact that you bring up a martini, like that's, yeah, even in drinking martinis, it's not something that people in many generations have done just sitting at home sipping a martini.
Right.
It might be the drink you get at a bar because you want to feel sophisticated or something.
Dan Campbell, somebody said. No chance it was Dan Campbell.
No.
No chance.
Dan Campbell would say something like, it's like hitting your PR on bench.
Campbell,
and you think like, yeah.
Campbell,
but then
right.
You're like, whoa,
right.
Man, I didn't turn in my math homework.
His ethos is all about the energy level, not the creative analogies or things and things like that.
Right,
you know?
Right,
like,
right.
He's not
right.
About the coming up with the good metaphors.
Bite a kneecap off.
Right. Like I said.
Success is like biting a kneecap.
Yeah.
It'll make you feel good for a little bit, but then there's always more kneecaps to bite.
Well, there are. Well, there's two.
The example he used in that one, I think there were three kneecaps.
There was a third
kneecap.
Didn't
he go to a third kneecap?
He did. Yeah.
Some mythical beast that he was fighting in his mind. Yeah.
Great coach. Not the brightest light on the Christmas tree.
I honestly sounds a little bit more like an acid head, who tend not to be very violent people. And yeah,
are you going
to
eat that third kneecap?
Bite a kneecap off?
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to D'Amico Ryans, someone who definitely knows how many kneecaps are in the human body. This was D'Amico Ryans on his coach's show looking for the Texans. This was a question about penalties in the Texans. Take a listen to this.
Yeah, for sure. You want to cut down on, you know, the things we can control, like false start, jumping off sides, those things we can't control. Some of the penalties that get kind of thrown on the offensive line aren't always the offensive line,
right.
Like a couple of those with where CJ has to get the ball out quicker, right? So we're not downfield. We got illegal man downfield a couple of times, not really on the offensive line. That's on us.
Mm-hmm.
Structurally, right? Offensively, get the ball out quicker, get us in the right play call on the cup. So penalties are a team thing, but the ones we can't control, we definitely have to control those.
Right, and the false starts, I know there's the whole process where the center is not sometimes making the calls, or the whole procedure is a little wonky, and that's where Laremy Tunsil tries to excuse himself while claiming that he's taking responsibility for it. He says, well, my name is the guy that's getting called, so I have to take responsibility for it. Like, all right, that sounds like accountability, I guess.
And then in the next sentence he says, but it's a whole team
Right. So Laremy, it's hard to make excuses for Laremy because he is operating at 4.5 times his normal clip when it comes to committing penalties.
How prolific.
Yeah, not just the false starts, but penalties in general. He's got 11. He's leading the league. He's very prolific this year.
Yep.
He's got 11 penalties, which would put him on pace for 45 penalties. That's a lot. That's a lot. That's way more than his normal run. It's been really, really bad for Laremy.
I wasn't really listening for this too much last year with D'Amico because it was the first year and it was a honeymoon period and things like that.
Yeah.
And I have no, what I'm about to say, I have zero issue with D'Amico doing. But this is the second time that I can remember in the last week or so where D'Amico has specifically pointed out by position, in this case by name, because he's your only quarterback that plays, someone that needs to do something better in interviews. You know, like in interviews, he's the defensive line, the interior of the defensive line, he pointed out specifically that they were not doing their job in the run game against Minnesota.
Right.
In that cut we played right there, he's talking about something CJ has to, specifically something CJ has to do better.
Yeah, and I think probably in D'Amico's mind, you think about both those position groups that he called out, the quarterback and the defensive tackles there. He didn't call them out by name, but that's a veteran bunch, the defensive tackles. I think, and then in calling out CJ Stroud, a little bit of that is maybe like Bill Belichick would rip Tom Brady in front of everybody, and then everybody would realize, okay, well, if he's going to rip Tom Brady, then I'm certainly not immune to
it. And Brady wanted that.
Right. Yeah, Brady was cool with it. I think with D'Amico, he's not going to do it in the same style or manner as Bill Belichick, but yeah, that might be a little bit of where the accountability is coming back into it. Like, listen, we're not just picking on the guys that are the most glaring examples or whatever. We're going to coach all of you up like this, and it is interesting that he chose to call out CJ by name before he called Laremy Tunsil out by name. But,
sometimes you look at how it gets handled by the person you're talking about.
Right, I know, but that's the whole thing. Like, the point is, you should be able to call out anybody, and I wonder how comfortable they feel calling out Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah, it would appear not very, just based on how things have gone the last several years.
Yeah.
It's not a 2024 problem.
Listeners, remind me if I'm forgetting a point where D'Amico has said something specifically about Laremy Tunsil this
year. My guess is CJ has less than zero issue with what D'Amico just said. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No, but the point being, if you're going to follow through on it, it's that, yeah, you can call out Tom Brady, but then you call out everybody else. Okay, if you call out CJ Stroud, then you should be able to call out Laremy Tunsil, too.
Hopefully there's no reason to this week. That would be nice, right? That would be nice if we got to come in on a Monday after a game. That's what I really want, is I want to win, but I want to win where there's the whole post-game show isn't, yeah, but.
Right.
Now the Bills are a good enough team. You think about the three teams the Texans have beat. The Colts, and the way the Colts played that day, which is basically just three gigantic pass plays and a block punt. The Bears, who are not a good football team. And then they beat the Jags, who are the only winless football team still left. I would hope that the Bills are a good enough team that this will be the first game for Texan fans maybe afterwards that who cares how it looks.
Even if it's an ugly victory.
Who cares?
Or
it's
whatever.
The Bills, because mathematically it means so much to you as well.
And I think even if the Bills aren't as dominant as they looked in the first three games of the season, they're still a good, solid football team, and they've got Josh Allen at quarterback.
Yes.
There are a lot of things defensively that I think the one thing the Bills' offense hasn't been able to do is have a lot of explosive plays downfield, or as many as they would like. The Texans' defense has been a mixed bag in that regard. They've had some really glaring errors. I mean, if Josh Allen were the quarterback of the Jaguars, take the exact same team, the Jaguars, I think, beat the Texans, and it might not even be that
close.
Might
beat them by 10.
Yeah. Like, you can't have Kamari Lassiter letting guys run downfield unchecked twice in that game. Josh Allen would have won that game. So, just by beating Josh Allen on what is also a better football team in total than the Jaguars are. I don't care if it's a last-minute field goal. I don't care if it's sloppy or ugly-looking. That's a quality win that you would have expected before the season was going to be a slug-out anyway.
Hey, by the way, your guy Kamari Lassiter?
Yeah.
Up to third on the odds board.
For Rookie of the Year.
For Defensive Rookie of the Year, yeah.
Can't face Trevor Lawrence every week, Kamari.
Yeah.
Here we go. Hop to it.
Up to third.
Got some Josh Allens of the world coming up. We got a Pat Mahomes in the mix. There's a Lamar Jackson down the road.
He's behind only Jared Verse, who is the favorite right now. Rams, right? Jared Verse, I think, from Florida State. Liatu Latu from the Colts is still second at plus 525. Best defensive player in the draft.
Best pass rusher
in the draft. And then Kamari Lassiter holding steady at 8-1. So your payout is still the same as it was last week.
40-1.
You're at 40-1. You're 40-1. That's right. Yeah, you're 40-1. Oh, man, look at Seth C. Payne, man.
I got a lot of futures bets out there. I got to go check on them.
Do you
see.
Really? Yeah. That's the only one I know about.
I'm a novice gambler, Sean. That's what we're suckers for, is the futures
bets. That's true.
In parlays. Right? I'm not a sucker for parlays. I know enough about math to know how stacked it is against me in the parlay.
Yeah.
And it's
and I still do
a trapping of human psychology that you think, hey, the old Bill O'Brien method of general managing was the parlay method. Like, hey, all we have to do is this crazy contract, and then this crazy trade, and then this crazy contract. Right. And if all these things work out, glory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Nico Collins up to fourth on Offensive Player of the Year odds board. Saquon Barkley number one, plus 450. Derrick Henry went from 40-1 to 5-1.
Oh, wow. That's a big leap off of one man.
It was a big game.
Yeah.
Justin Jefferson, 3. Nico Collins, 4.
Well, look, Derrick Henry, the whole thing about Derrick Henry, and he got a slow start off the season, that game looked a lot more like what you'd expect, which is, all right, you've got Lamar Jackson, who you have to be concerned about the deep threat. He's a running threat himself, which creates an extra gap on the defensive front for the running back. And that all came to fruition in a big way against the Bills. That's why I'm so excited about Joe Mixon potentially coming back. Mm-hmm. The Bills, much like the Texans, are just, they're kind of a lightweight defense. I don't mean that like lightweight and bad, but they're actual body weights. Mm-hmm. If you add up all 11 body weights, they're light when they're out on the field, just like the Texans. And that creates issues in the run game at times. And we saw that with the Ravens. So Joe Mixon being back this week, going against the defense and the Bills that does a very good job of limiting explosive plays. Everything that teams have been doing against the Texans, including like the Jaguars mixed it up from what they normally do and played more conservative zone coverages. This is what the Bills do. They don't blitz a lot. They just play good, sound, aggressive defense. And they've got a lot of athletes, but they're kind of light. So Joe Mixon is a huge, huge factor this week.
Big time. Big time. Text message circling over to the Astros. We'll hit the Astros again between now and the end of the show. If you missed it, Seth and I did our first hex of the postseason. We hexed Tyler Holton, their opener today, with the hopes that the Astros jump on him early, get some runs, and win the game, man. Astros season hanging in the balance. Text message on the Astros. Haven't heard you all talk about the Pena bunt in the ninth inning, staying out of the double play, which the Astros hit into a lot. And Pena, actually, for a fast guy, hits into a decent amount of double plays also.
Yeah.
We had not brought up that aspect of it, of the bunt, but you and I were both pro-bunt in that situation.
We were pro-bunting, but that is one extra added argument to why we were pro-bunt. Yeah, I'll act like in the moment I thought, oh, yeah, and you avoid the double play threat with Pena.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I was more thinking about Pena on the day and the way he'd been hitting or not hitting specifically, and his ability to actually bunt, and then to, and also your best option at maybe not even getting it out there with a successful bunt,
or
creating an errant throw because the catcher and the pitcher also know that Pena is a threat to get to first. So I in the moment, you know, you and I have a policy of in these moments we make our decision before we find out the outcome.
Right.
So like if it hadn't worked out, I still would have said, all right, I'm cool with him doing it in that moment.
Especially because the next three hitters hit a line drive, got a walk, and hit another line drive. Like the next three hitters all had great at bats after that. It just didn't work out.
The one thing that I'm second guessing myself is bringing Josh Hader in the ninth inning, which I was adamantly against at the beginning, partly because they put up that stat of
1 in 538.
Yeah, that only one team in 539 opportunities in the postseason has come back from a three-run deficit in the ninth inning.
Three or more runs since 1990.
We're not sure we believe that stat, and we haven't had anybody confirm it or shut it down to us. But let's say that is the actual stat. I feel like it's overly aggressive. If that's the actual stat, if that's what the analytics are telling you and everything, like how hard it is to come back, I would say don't waste Hader in game one. And because it's going to be improbable no matter which way you cut it. Bring in another good reliever that still gives you a chance, but you know doesn't potentially have Hader pitching three straight
games.
If
there's a save situation in either of these next two games, Hader has to be in there.
Yeah.
And that means that in game three, he'll be pitching 3 days in a row. Now, I don't know. I mean, Hader's been a workhorse this year.
Yeah.
So maybe he's fine with it, and you get a day off after that. You don't play till Saturday if you win the series. And then you don't play again on Sunday because, you know, the way the ALDS sets up, there's a lot of days off for the
our friend from Detroit that's been texting all morning, who seems to think that a 1-0 lead in a wild card series is
insurmountable. I think he thinks that it's still only a one-game wild card is what it feels like.
I know. Yeah,
in 2015 with the Astros.
Oh, he promises he's going to call in tomorrow after they clinch.
Oh, yes. Good luck with that. Yeah, okay. Cool.
So that guy's still alive, at least. So the
now,
I didn't use the hex on him. I didn't use the hex on him.
No, you just wish death on him. That's all.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't involve. That's not as serious as the hex.
Go die, everybody.
Yeah.
The percentage success I have on wishing death upon people is alarmingly and disappointingly low right now. I thought for a little while I might have some superpower.
It's only like 36%.
I mean, everybody that I've said go die to will eventually die, but not with the. Not with the same urgency level that I'm expecting.
That you're hoping for.
Yeah.
Right. No, I understand. I get what you're getting at. So we were both pro. We say all that to say we were both pro bunt. There were way more positive outcomes with Pena bunting there than there would have been with letting him swing in that situation. All right. Devontae Adams is a big story this morning. The Raiders, at least it's been reported, the Raiders are willing to move on from Devontae Adams. The odds are out already on where he's going to land. The Texans are way down the list. We're not going there. But if Devontae Adams lands at a couple of these other places, I think it becomes a little more problematic for the Texans. We'll let you know who the favorites are. We'll do that coming up next.